basically, I have challenged the constitutionality of a portion of the ordinance, although the whole ordinance may be subject to a constitutional challenge. I'm focusing on what I was cited for, which was sleeping in a vehicle. So I wrote a brief and submitted it. The city responded to that brief. Basically, my argument is pretty simple. It's simply that sleeping in a vehicle is conduct that in no way infringes upon the rights of others. The city responds that they have broad police power to regulate conduct on city streets. I found a case in Florida where the sleeping in a vehicle portion of an anti-camping ordinance was actually overturned on the appellate level, and various other Supreme Court decisions seem to support the notion that if you're not bothering anyone, you should be at liberty to live life as you see fit. So that's the essence of my argument, and in 2 weeks, the judge will probably make a decision on that.
Now, you had said that that the Tobe decision that happened in Santa Ana recently never addressed the issue of whether about sleeping in a vehicle. Is that correct?
That's correct. The Tobe decision by the California Supreme Court was a ruling that came down concerning a large group of homeless folks in Santa Ana who actually, well, they were charged with violating the local ordinances down there, and they challenged that, and they won their case on the appellate level in the state of California, and then the case went up to the Supreme Court where it was reversed in favor of the city. And essentially what the Supreme Court said was that the local government had the proper authority to regulate camping in public areas. Now, that case raised all kinds of issues, and although it's about 40 pages, it bears reading because they address all kinds of things like the right to travel, the necessity defense, the distinction between people who are homeless because they have no other way to survive, and people who may make the choice to be homeless. But basically, to answer Becky's question, they did not address at all in their ruling the issue of sleeping in a vehicle. So part of my task is to make the distinction to the local judge that the ruling that came down from the Supreme Court does not really address the issues that I'm dealing with, i.e. the permissibility of sleeping in one's private vehicle.
As the City Hall Sleepers protest is challenging the sleeping ban here in the city of Santa Cruz, this issue about the constitutionality of the camping ban law comes up time and time again. The courts have not been terribly helpful in terms of, from a human rights point of view. So we've got really a difficult row to hoe that way. Just recently, Judge Stevens here in Santa Cruz apparently said in chambers to Eleanor Eisenberg of the ACLU that he questioned the constitutionality of Section B of the city's camping ban law, that is the covering up with blankets portion. He suggested that if a person was awake and they were covering up with a blanket or sleeping bag to keep warm, that it should be considered clothing and not bedding, and hence be legal. Now, we have not seen this in our local police department. They've been pretty much confiscating blankets and writing out these $162 tickets willy-nilly, contrary to what you might have read this morning in the Santa Cruz Sentinel from our favorite writer, Karen Clark, who continually calls the protesters at City Hall campers. I actually called her on the phone yesterday in an attempt to correct her journalistic slant. She apparently did not respond to my suggestions. I said that the people at City Hall are protesters and civil rights workers and not campers. There's a very specific reason why she keeps referring to the protesters as campers. And if you have a chance to read the declaration that was submitted by Mayor Mike Rodkin, he continually calls the protest in quotes, as though it's not a real protest. And then he refers to the protest as an encampment. Now, if it were truly an encampment, you would see tents, barbecues, picnic tables, hibachis, hammocks, campfires, weenie roasts, marshmallows, all those sorts of things that many of us associate with camping. If you go by City Hall, you'll see nary a tent, nary a hammock, no barbecue, no cooking facilities. People do have bedding or blankets and sleeping bags, which they can use for warmth. It does get cold at night, and some people have chosen to sleep at City Hall in direct violation of that law to protest the law. But the protest at City Hall is about the sleeping ban, which is what, you know, your case, Jim, is also about the sleeping ban portion. Now, the question I'd like to put out for the free radio listeners is, who is victimized if a person should fall asleep? Where is the victim? In your case, Jim, when you were asleep in the vehicle, was there a complaint filed?
No. To my knowledge, there was no complaint filed. Actually, about three nights before, I had been sleeping in my vehicle in the Harvey West neighborhood, and at about 4 o'clock in the morning, I received this loud banging on my camper door. And I opened the door, and there was a police officer there, and he told me that I was in violation of a local ordinance, and that I couldn't be, quote-unquote, camping during certain hours in Santa Cruz, and basically told me that if I wanted to do that, I would have to go outside the city limits.
So it was a police officer then, and there was no complaint filed by a public citizen?
To the best of my knowledge, that's correct. Anyway, so that night I wasn't cited, but I had been essentially asked to leave town if I wanted to sleep in my vehicle. So a couple of nights later, I decided that I would rather than respond to this cop's invitation to sort of leave town, I would go ahead and park downtown and invite the citation and bring the issue at least before a judge.
You can see this as a civil rights issue then.
Yes, and I saw my parking there, which I was actually right across the street from the police station, two or three nights later as a rather mild act of civil disobedience. January 6th.
And so this was at a time when I guess they would tell you that the open-air shelter was open. Not the open-air shelter, the armory was open. Why would you, for example, choose not to use the armory at this time?
I've built a camper on, and in my own humble way, I consider myself a homeowner, and it's basically my house, and I choose to live in it. Actually, the night that I was warned, I was simply told that there was no way I could do this in the city limits of Santa Cruz. After I was sighted, the policeman told me about sort of quasi-sanctioned way of sleeping in church parking lots, which I have been doing since that time. But it was after I was sighted that I was finally given that information.
You know, so in other words, even though we're talking, you're referring about the church program, it was an exception to the camping ban passed in the summer of 1995. By the city council, which allows churches who are involved with the ISSP, Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, no more than 3 vehicles of that limit to allow people to sleep in their vehicles in their parking lots. Actually, as far as I know, there's only one church that's currently doing this. That's Holy Cross, and indeed there has been word that not only is Holy Cross doing that with vehicles, but they've opened up a whole area behind Holy Cross as kind of a mini campground area, at least during the night, sort of a sleeping area, not a cramped campground area, but I haven't heard. Do you know much about that, Jim? I just kind of changed the subject very briefly.
Yeah, somebody did. I was in the neighborhood there, and somebody told me about that, that it was opened also to people camping outside as opposed to in vehicles. I sleep at a church up on High Street. I think it's Grace Lutheran or Methodist, something like that, and I do it in sort of a de facto fashion. I'm the only one up there, and I've been sleeping there virtually for 5 months, and they haven't said anything to me, and I haven't said anything to them, but it works.
Yep.
And I understand that Garfield Park works in that fashion also, with Baptist Church down there.
See, Garfield Park, I had heard it stopped their program as of May, with the exception of a few people that maybe they've seen. What about when you need to go to the bathroom? You know, that's the constant bugaboo raised by the city council, not merely for campers generally, but more specifically in the protest, the specter of feces and urine and so forth. What do you do when you need to take a dump?
Well, I go find a bathroom. It sometimes can be a bit of a dash first thing in the morning, but I manage to get it done. And actually, one of the points in my brief that I bring up is that it may be that the spirit of these anti-camping laws are an attempt to look out for the general health and safety of the community, and I think that's a bona fide concern. What I don't think is proper is to pass, and there are separate ordinances that deal with public urination and public defecation, and I think those should always be enforced. But to pass...
Even if there are no bathrooms open at night?
Well, I think a guy can always find a place
talk about a pressing issue.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's always the necessity defense, you know. I mean, under any given set of circumstances, you know, if a person has to go to the bathroom and there's no place, well, there's something that can't be...
Yeah, I don't know about the case, sir. You're right, theoretically, but have you ever heard of a case, I probably have to research this in our lives, where a person has beaten a urination or defecation ticket by saying there are no bathrooms open in this area and the nearest one is 6 miles away and I've got no car?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, see, I think these are class laws. You know, they're hidden as public safety laws. They're actually class laws. But
make a comment on that. The law is written so broadly that if you were driving a car through the city limits after 11 o'clock at night and had a child sleeping on the back seat of the car as you drove through the city, that child would be breaking the law and subject to a $162 fine. The law is so broad that if a mother were holding a baby in her arms wrapped in blankets after 11 o'clock at night, that baby would be breaking the law by being covered in blankets after 11 o'clock at night. This law is just overly broad. And again, you know, how can, if there's no harm caused by a person sleeping between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 11 p.m., where is the harm? Why does it suddenly become harmful to the public if the person is sleeping between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m.?
Yeah, as far as, here's an interesting thing for all you legal scholars. This law is overly broad, no question, but it is definitely not vague. It is very specific. So for those of you who want to know the distinctions between, there can be circumstances where a law is not vague at all, but it is completely overly broad. And I guess, Becky, you not only, you've given these examples, which no doubt defenders of the sleeping ban would say are far-fetched. I mean, no officer, I'm sure, has ever ticketed a mother for having a baby wrapped up in blankets or having a child in a van. Although, that's not true. There was a 14-year-old child, the child of Eddie Hicks, who got a ticket, camping ticket, for sleeping in Eddie's van after 11 o'clock at night. Now, they weren't driving through the city. They were parked on a street in the city. But you actually were involved with a case which you took to one of the supervisor's offices of a woman who was returning from a conference. I believe she have her family with her? I'm not sure. Maybe she was alone. She stopped to sleep.
She'd left her family up north where she lived. And she was actually a passenger in the car, and the woman was driving. They had been coming back from a conference at Asilomar, and it was after 11 o'clock at night, and they were suffering some road fatigue for their long drive, and so they had pulled over into the Greyhound Rock parking lot to rest for approximately a half hour. And they were sighted, and this was outside of the Santa Cruz city limits. And there is the roadside resting provision, which was ignored by the police officer. And she and the driver were both sighted for this $162.
Actually, no, it's not a... We're talking about the county law. They were cited for the city law outside the city limits?
Well, I don't know. They were cited for sleeping in the vehicle.
Outside the city limits?
Yeah, it was at Greyhound Rock.
It sounds like they got some other kind of ticket rather than a... Because there is no provision... I think they got a parking ticket is what they got, which can also be expensive because in order to stop people from sleeping, as you may notice as you drive up and down Highway 1, you have a series of no parking signs all along the road, the point being to deter people who want to sleep at night. And sometimes those signs say, as they do in Santa Barbara, no parking between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. And what that means is no sleeping between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m.
Let's talk about the public safety issue. If people who are driving and are very fatigued are afraid to pull over and take a rest, talk about a serious public safety hazard of an overtired driver continuing on just for fear of a ticket.
Yeah, actually... this issue isn't really about the city sleeping ban, it's about the county policy, but that's relevant because one of the arguments that city police might use in your case, Jim, is that, hey, as they already told you, why don't you just go outside the city limits where it's legal to park and sleep, and, there'll be no problem. The problem with that, of course, is that even though it is, in fact, that is correct, it is legal to sleep on county property outside the city limits, outside the so-called no camping zones, and I believe there are four no camping zones that are relatively cover a very small percentage of the county. That includes the Paso Tiempo area, the Tanner Heights area, Ocean View Extension. There's a couple of areas that have specifically been ruled in the county no camping, and that there you can actually get a citation for falling asleep on public property. Elsewhere in the county, you cannot legally get a citation. Nonetheless, the county sheriff's office, the sheriff's department, which runs the police force in the county, and which is likely to encounter you at night, has told the River Street refugees who were investigating this issue 2 or 3 months ago that it is illegal to sleep anywhere on county property except in a campground. This is not true. This is a lie. This is a violation of the law as passed in 1985.
Police officers don't lie?
Yeah, in bed asleep. While the rest of us are running around trying to find a place to do so. They're not telling the truth. We've had this problem literally for a decade. Linda Edwards, a famous political activist, joined the homeless movement, at least joined my division or my brigade or my part of the homeless movement, the homeless table, in 1988 when she was harassed out of the county. She'd actually been given permission to sleep in the property she was on, and the deputies kept returning to harass her and harass her and harass her. So it may be an important part of your case, Jim. You, of course, aren't using a necessity defense, and I guess maybe it isn't an important part of your case, but there are other legal places for you to sleep. But there aren't other legal places for you to sleep because the deputies, as a de facto policy that they have stated publicly, do not allow people to sleep at night in spite of an emergency roadside resting law in the county, which, by the way, the city would do well to emulate. I think you could perhaps recommend that to that great liberal Scott Kennedy. Or maybe that great liberal, you know, Celia Scott and Catherine Byers could get off their butts and propose a roadside resting law. It would seem to me that such a proposal, if rejected by the city council, and again, a roadside resting law states you can rest for a few hours if you're driving through the city, if you need to pull over and rest. It's an obvious public safety need, and it has already been provided for by the county. There's no reason it can't also be provided for by the city. The city council's refusal to enact such a law would show to me some kind of serious problem that might educate the public as to what's really going on in the city council. And frankly, I don't think the city council would pass such a law because they are so militantly opposed to any alteration in the existing anti-homeless sleeping ban situation. But, you know, I tend to go on. What I'd like to do, Jim, is get back to your actual... Have you discussed... I've been away for a few minutes, folks, as you probably know, kind of handling a court matter. Traffic school I got arranged, and I bumped it ahead to August in spite of Bailiff Wapner. What the hell is his name? Bailiff Wongsley. It was me and Wongsley again in the courtroom, but that's another story. Judge Barton cut through.
My favorite bailiff.
We've had some dealings, and Wongsley seems to like to confiscate tape recorders kind of, and make people wait in the hallways in the courts and so forth. By the way, you have a right to record your proceedings if you have, or it's anybody else's proceedings under 980C of the California Rules of Court. Get your pencils out, run to your law books, check out the law library. 980C of the California Rules of Court allows you to make an oral recording of any action in a court setting, provided you inform the judge beforehand and provided he does not evidence cause why you do not, why you cannot do that. Now, there are judges who won't let you do it anyway, but, you know, that's because they decide they're going to overrule the law and run the courts like their own personal fiefdoms. Many faces, Richard McAdams was like that the other day, didn't allow you, Becky, to make a tape recording of your divorce proceeding, as I remember. But that's neither here nor there. Let's get back to the sleeping ban here.
Anyway, to answer your question, you did briefly address my case. Becky and I talked about it a little bit, but in a nutshell, my argument. By sleeping in my vehicle, I'm in no way infringing upon the rights or interests of others, and that as a citizen of the country, I should be allowed to express my sense of liberty as long as I'm not bothering anyone.
That's a common sense argument. Do you have a legal justification for that?
Well, yes, there are cases that I've cited that use that argument.
Such as?
Well, there was a case in Southern Florida in 1980. they may or may not be able to make the case that they don't want people actually living in their vehicles.
And it would, spot.
Yeah, it would be more honest for them to change the wording locally to read from sleep to lodge, because at least then we'd be dealing with what they're really trying to inhibit, and that is people living where they can best afford to live.
Now, here in Santa Cruz and most of the areas where you might be parking, there are time limits on how long you can park in any one spot. It's, you know, 48 hours or 72 hours, something like that. That seems that that law would be sufficient to prevent a person from lodging in that parking spot.
Devil's advocate for the city would say, nah, they can move over to the next parking spot, you know, go run around the block once and they'll be fine. So somebody could theoretically, you know, live in their vehicle in town all year by simply moving their vehicle every 71 hours from one spot to another, and that spot could be the next, you know, 20 feet away from the spot they were in before.
And there are people that are doing that. They're saying that affordable housing in Santa Cruz is a car.
Well,
that you can afford to get.
Let's suppose that other people like yourself want to argue their cases. We know that Attorney Kate Wells, along with David Beauvais and Larry Hildes, who are helping the City Hall sleepers, vigilers, some of whom have vehicles, by the way, to fight tickets at City Hall, and they may even, I'm sure that they'll probably extend this to maybe assist people who have problems with their vehicles, since it's just a matter of getting their legal arguments. If you're interested, by the way, in fighting the sleeping ban, I cannot speak for Attorney Kate Wells, but I'm sure that she would be willing to at least have a word with you about it, or refer you to some of the folks at the vigil, the City Hall Sleepers Protest, or even possibly to Jim, if he's willing to talk to you about his case. Just give a call to 457-1545. That's her number. She doesn't have much time, so she may be pretty brief with you, but at least she'll talk to you, unlike 99% of the attorneys in this town who don't seem to be interested in the civil rights aspects of these issues. But getting back to your case, did you spend a lot of time in the law library researching this? Is it a hard thing for an individual to learn to seek the kinds of legal precedents that you are citing in your cases, to look for new ones? And what should an individual do who's embarking on this course? What do you suggest?
Well, it is hard. It's serious work. Actually, I sort of enjoyed it once I began to get familiar with how the process works. The first thing I did was go down and get the NOLO Press book on legal research.
Which is in the law library?
It's in the law library. I think it's in the public library, and you can, and it's also at Bookshop Santa Cruz. Well, there it is. Anyway, it's in print. It's available. In,
where is the law library for those who want to know?
The law library is essentially just south of the Veterans Hall. The street there, I guess, is... I'm not sure the name of that street that runs by, right? It's right near between River and Front Street.
Yeah, the street that connects River and Front Street on a diagonal. It's across from the Wells Fargo Bank and the parking structure.
Right.
It's open to the public from what, 9 to 5?
I think 8 to 5.
8 to 5?
And the librarians tend to be very helpful there. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot of information. But I think I would recommend that a person take a look at the NOLO Press legal research book. They give you a quick, concise overview of the process, and then you just need to do the research, do the reading.
And the books are there for you to find the precedents in once you know how to do it.
Yes, it's all there. If anybody out there does have or has been cited for sleeping in a vehicle, and they want to take a look at my brief, my telephone number is 469-5292, and I'd be glad to talk to you and show you the work I've done so far. My research was not exhaustive by any means. These days, having access to a computer is really the way to go in legal research. I did the best that I could, and I think I put together a fundamentally sound argument, but I didn't exhaust the subject at all. I found, actually, in talking to some local ACLU-type attorneys, that they thought I was... they actually discussed... discourage me from even fighting it because of the Tobe decision, and I was a bit taken aback. People seem to be look at this Tobe decision as this awesome thing, but if you actually read it, in my case, it doesn't really address my issue, so I wasn't discouraged by that ruling at all. But if one reads that decision, there's all kinds of things going on that the court addresses, and one should read the dissenting opinion in that case and look at the appellate decision that ruled in favor of the campers. There's all kinds of encouraging information and reasoning that supports the right to travel argument, the necessity defense, et cetera, et cetera. And
equal protection of laws.
Equal protection.
Right to be free from cruel.
Right. And just like the vagrancy laws that used to be used to sort of sweep undesirable, quote-unquote, undesirable people off the streets, they were eventually overturned. Yeah. And these actual anti-sleeping ban boils down to another version of vagrancy laws. And if one can get high enough in the court system, I think one eventually begins to have a better chance of getting a reasoned decision where justice is actually the primary consideration rather than political expediency or some sort of economic considerations. So I would encourage people to both continue fighting this issue on the street, but also look to the courts and give the courts the opportunity to deal with the pure issue here, which is whether or not people have the right to be left alone if they're not bothering people.
Yeah, eloquently put, Jim. This kind of dual track that you suggest, which is continuing to educate the public through protest and pressure the legislative body, which locally is our city council, and to also inform the broader public of the state and the nation of essentially civil rights abuses, because that's what vagrancy laws are, that's what camping laws are when used in this way. They're attacks on poor people. They're an attempt to move them out of sight, move them down the road, declare that they have no legitimate place in a society because of their economic status. So that's how I view it. What about this two-track strategy? You were involved earlier on. You were a witness and a participant to some extent in the Union of the Homeless in Santa Cruz in 1992. What was your analysis of that? Give us a candid statement about how you viewed that particular protest movement and anything else regarding the protests against the violations of homeless rights here in Santa Cruz over the years. And feel free to be candid. I know you've been a critic of mine on occasion, and that's fine. Let's have it out here, for heaven's sake.
Well, it's all a bit of a blur, to tell you the truth, but actually about almost 3 years ago now, there was a protest at what we used to refer to as First Amendment Park, the corner of Josephine and River Streets, across from Stapleton's Food Market.
Where Food Now Bomb now serves.
Yes, and has since that time. That's when that was first established. But basically what happened there I thought was quite interesting. That parcel of property was a parcel of property, and still is, that was owned by the state of California. I think Caltrans had jurisdiction there. And someone was smart enough to choose that particular piece so that there was an interesting jurisdictional situation. When the police finally came to remove people from that protest, they actually had to bring state police officers to make the arrests. But anyway, what happened there, as I recall, was a march from City Hall, or from the county building, and sort of a squat on that piece of property where we camped for about 3 or 4 days. The actual objectives there, I think, were calling attention to the necessity of providing some way for folks who are, you know, shall we say, less than middle class to accommodate themselves without just being swept into the jails or fined incessantly and thrown into the courts. And there was a large group of people there, many of whom had different objectives, and we were all learning how to get along and interact together with some balance. But what I was trying to achieve there was the notion that perhaps the state land that we were on was symbolic of lots of state land in this county, up on the north coast, all over the place, that lies, that sits with perhaps a few cows grazing on it, and that there might be some innovative way of getting out and using some of this government-owned land in sort of a self-help way, where people could build perhaps non-conforming, what Governor Brown used to call Class K housing, in other words, real estate that was of a non-commercial nature that was utilitarian and just provided people with a living. So that was my particular bent there. That's at least what I came to see.
You built a structure, did you not?
I actually created a structure in a rather illicit fashion that didn't stand too long. I think Caltrans came and took the stuff down and hauled it away, and then we put something else up.
Did you get ticketed for that?
No, I was rather covert in my activities. Anyway, that was that, and actually a lot more went on there, but that's just one little view of what happened, and I think that was captured by Paul Brindell on his video called The Camping Band or something. It plays on the local cable channel periodically. I think it's called The Sleep In or The Camp In or something.
Brindell was quite the video photographer in those days.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a very good job.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Brindell, I call him Panda Bear Paul, to his utter disgust. Matter of fact, he no longer talks to me because I call him. That's one of the reasons. I mean, a number of reasons. Our egos keep bouncing off each other. We can see each other, so there's a problem. Paul he's been a long-time service provider. Some of my fellow actors have called him a poverty pimp at times because, in fact, he does get grants for his job, which is predicated on, you know, so-called homeless services. And in a way, one wonders what percentage of the money goes to pay the poverty administrators of these programs and how much actually gets to the poor. But he was also, he had developed a more of a radical bent at that time. He did need to put that on video. What about, have you been at all involved in protests since then, or have you had any observations to make about protests since then, particularly the City Hall sleepout now? Any sense of that? Is it a futile thing? Is it a positive thing? Do you have any criticisms or do you have any suggestions? Do you have any praise? What's your sense?
Well, I guess speaking, first of all, from a legal standpoint, I think when one reads the Tobe decision, it looks like a bit of an uphill battle. In other words, they have given the cities the right to really regulate basically outdoor camping. So one has to understand what one is up against. The court in that decision directed the defendants to seek relief not from the city but from the county, where the Constitution actually puts that responsibility. So one thing I've noticed is that I don't see anybody really responding to that direction by the court, and I think it might be smart to gather a strategy that does exactly that, to look to the county, which is given the responsibility by the state constitution to provide for indigent folks, and perhaps there is some room for finding a solution there.
Practical terms, would that mean saying to everybody who are sleeping outside illegally in the city of Santa Cruz, move into the county, deal with it there? Because the county couldn't change the city sleeping.
Well, I'm not so much talking about into the crossing over the line from the city of Santa Cruz into the county, but actually going to the county government, who is charged with taking care of folks who need help, in other words, welfare. Now, the traditional response is things like general assistance, aid to families, et cetera, et cetera. But what I see as a possibility is that this group of folks who essentially
they are looking for a campground. Some of
has a problem. Okay, we're looking for a solution here. The city, I see that they.
Fred Keeley, who's now, he's out of it anyway, he's running for some higher office.
And then we have these three troglodytes on the Board of Supervisors. What are they?
Ray Belgard.
Ray Belgard, old Ray. Who else?
Simon.
Walt Simons. He's actually the distinguished chair of the board now, who would only allow the people concerned about these helicopters to speak for 1 hour, though there were more than 100 of them in the chambers, and they were all saying new and interesting and important things.
And then there's Jan Butte, who beat out Carolyn Busenhart, your runner-up for most irritating personality in Santa Cruz.
Oh, yes, right. How can I forget Carolyn Busenhart, a hairdresser in San Soquel? But Jan Butte's, it's hard to say if she's much improvement. I mean, actually, anybody is an improvement over Carolyn Busenhart. But Carolyn Busenhart is, you know, like David Duke running for office or something. I mean, it's, she is an effective organizer at the local level, no question. But not a good big vote getter in the bigger scene, at least not yet. But nonetheless, the political situation of the Board of Supervisors is hostile to, I think it's hostile to these kinds of appropriations or designation. It is true that in other areas, such as, I believe it was Mendocino County, there was a campground set up on the beach that endured for a couple of years. In Marin County, Whispering Pines was set up by the Board of Supervisors there, and it ran for at least a season. The county, well, those are the two instances that I know of.
I want to say that the Board of Supervisors recently voted down another low-income housing project in SoCal. They were all congratulating each other and saying, oh, yes, everybody wants parkland and open space. Meanwhile, there are just poor people have no place to live and are criminalized for sleeping.
Indeed, the county was the victim and is the, I have to say, the subject of a lawsuit by Robert Lee and a number of other people that they're violating the state, their state laws regarding appropriate ratios of low-income housing, and that, I think, has recently been struck, you know, that lawsuit is having hard going in the courts. So there's a politically difficult climate. That doesn't mean people can't do it, and indeed, there's also a much more conservative mentality in the county generally, although it's hard to tell. I mean, you know, the hills contain a lot of folks who abandoned the cities, you know, and kind of have gone off and done their thing in the not so much the suburbs as in the mountains. So, you know, you could be right. It could be a positive avenue to try. Massive protest in the mid-80s produced a number of changes. But I think that Jane Immler, who was involved in these protests, or Calamity Jane, as I call her, eventually abandoned the county. They set up a city-county task force that went nowhere in the mid-80s around this, as many task forces do. They called it task farce, I think is what you called it, something like that. Let's go back, since we have you here in the studio, to what the city attorney responded when you presented. You presented a series of arguments, perhaps you could summarize them again, about you're the right to sleep in a vehicle, and then the city attorney gave a response, and you, of course, were prepared today to respond with your response to his response. Can you kind of run through those briefly for the audience?
Yes, well, basically, as I stated before, my argument is an argument that states basically my behavior isn't bothering anyone, and I think a local ordinance that inhibits my sleeping in a camper is unconstitutional. So the city's response to my brief was basically two or three points. The first one was they cited the what's called the presumption of validity that the California Supreme Court has sort of stated that it will be presumed that all local ordinances are valid. And where there's ever a doubt between a challenge to a local ordinance, the Supreme Court encourages the judge to decide in favor of the local ordinance. Well, my response to that argument was that within the last 2 years, there's been two local ordinances, one that was ruled unconstitutional by a judge, the anti-sitting ordinance, and another ordinance that was rescinded because it probably couldn't withstand a constitutional challenge, the meter feeding ordinance. and so that in the case of Santa Cruz County, perhaps they don't really deserve this presumption of validity. So that was my first response. In responding to the city's motion, further, they argued that basically they argued the Tobe decision that the city has broad powers to regulate behavior on the streets and sidewalks, and I attempted to distinguish that my case wasn't really addressed by the Tobe decision. And so the city attorney apparently has just ignored the facts of my case and is hoping that the judge will look at my case as a regular violation of the camping ban, where in fact it is quite specifically different than traditional camping outside. And thirdly, I just restated the other side of the police powers argument, and that is that, yes, police powers exist, they're broad. In some cases, a local municipality may restrict individual liberty, but in order to do so, there has to be a justification for that. And in my case, I don't see that the justification is there. I don't know if I've answered your question.
Oh, well, I think you have.
Oh, yeah,
you've summarized, you know, your arguments, their arguments, and your response. Can you give us when will you be returning to court to present these arguments? And are they going to file counter arguments to your arguments?
Well, I don't think so. 2 weeks from today, the 28th at 10 o'clock, Department 1 will be back in front of Judge Kelly. And I anticipate that between now and then, I will submit a written reply to their opposition to my motion to dismiss. And the judge will make his decision. And if the judge is considering justice as opposed to political expediency, I feel as though there's a valid chance that we will find that at least the sleeping in a vehicle portion of the local anti-camping ordinance will be dropped.
Well, I hope that that the audience goes to this this hearing, both for you, and I guess at the same time there's going to be a consideration of a lot of other folks with the City Hall Sleepers Vigil tickets. They'll be coming right down the road there. We're running out of time here at Bathrop Spears Broadsides, but here's an important message from our sponsor.
I'd like to invite all of our listeners to come to Cathcart and Pacific Avenue at 9 p.m. on Saturday, June 15th. That's tomorrow night. Bring a candle and join an assembly that will begin at Friendship Corner in downtown Santa Cruz and proceed to the City Hall Sleepers protest at 809 Center Street. This is a gathering in remembrance of Morgan Firestar, who committed suicide a week ago. Morgan was a courageous homeless rights activist, an eloquent voice against psychiatric oppression, tough and caring lesbian mother, and a prolific writer, singer, musician, and poet. Her zine, Lunatic Fringe, had worldwide distribution. She fought for the rights of women in prison, and even though she had very little physical strength, she found the time and energy to support the vigil against the sleeping ban with donations of coffee, clothes, and kind words. We're going to gather at Pacific and Cathcart and bring candles and have a candlelight procession up Pacific Avenue to Church Street, cut over on Church Street over to City Hall, and have a circle where we'll have music, poetry, and remembrances. So please join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. To honor her memory.
Well, I'll be there. She was quite a woman. Quite a shock hearing that she's gone. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides today. On the Monday show, you will get some recorded stuff, hopefully of exciting events over the weekend. I should be getting ready to go to jail, but instead I'm running around doing my usual radio and court time stuff, which isn't so good for me, but at least keeps things going out on the airwaves. If you want to be a part of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, if you want to discuss issues, if something Jim Purcell said here that interests you further, if you have information you want to give him or get from him, give a call to my number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and even while I'm in jail, someone will be picking up the messages from that line. If you want to actually say something on the air but are unable to come into the studio or find yourself a little shy about this, leave a long message on that number, 423-4833, and that will be transferred to a live broadcast if you wish.
Also, if you'd like to join us to go up to San Francisco, there where Robert is due to be incarcerated on Monday, I'm sure all the police officers are cheering as they hear this, please join us at City Hall on Monday at 1:30 p.m. We'll be leaving shortly thereafter in a caravan up to San Francisco at to 850 Bryant Street at the Hall of Justice in San Francisco. There's a rally at 4 p.m.
where I will serve bagels, believe it or not.
For this bagel-serving criminal who's going to be taught a lesson.
Bagel-serving bad man, that's what they call me.
Yeah, so we want to wish him off in style. Mr. Twister will be up there. He's a champion of protesting stupid laws, and he's right there with us on this one.
Right. Also, I remind you, our guest, Jim Purcell, has invited those who have an interest in the sleeping in your vehicle issue and have questions or information to share on that. Can give him a call at 469-5296. I want to thank him, and I beg your pardon, 5292. Appreciate that correction. That's Jim Purcell at 469-5292. Yeah, and thanks for coming in, Jim, and thank you, Becky. Hey, I hope you come back soon. Matter of fact, if you want to do a regular weekly update on what's going on this or other issues you think that affect poor people, as far as I'm concerned, you're welcome to use the time, since I'd like to see somebody using it while I'm doing it up in San Bruno or wherever they send me. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. We're going to go out on the rest of an interview with Keith McHenry and me, which you heard the beginnings of earlier, and we'll then your next talk show host, or if he's not talking, maybe he's musicking. Not sure what he's doing, but he'll be joining you shortly.
The heat of the soup, the you know, the whether there's a cooking tent properly in place, and various other regulations that, you know, at first glance seem to bear some rational relation to proper food preparation and make for the health and safety of the folks eating the food. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, as we've discussed endlessly in the last year here, and you and I know, the actual situation was they would figure out one regulation, you would work to meet it, and then they would find another regulation. You actually discovered internal documents, did you not, that showed that they were literally grasping for new regulations.
Right, they'd run out, at one point they had run out of every possible way to jerk us around, and they asked, there's an internal memo from the from Mr. Chin, who is the health inspector, to other government agencies asking for more ideas on what to throw at Food Not Bombs to keep them out of compliance. He was worried that we would be in compliance. And I just briefly, like, for instance, you know, there's this, those California law says that that we do not need to have a health permit. We're not a food facility. And it says that clearly in the California health codes. And yet, that we were declared a health facility by the government because it was to their advantage. And so, for instance,
we declared to need a food facility permit.
Right, that we needed they declared us a food facility and therefore needing a food facility permit.
This is under the CURFL law 27552 of the Health and Safety Code.
Here's an aspect of the law that's interesting. All food in California is to be 6 inches off the ground, even if it's in a box. Now, if you went to the produce warehouse, because our food was not high enough off the ground. I measured every pallet at Veritable Vegetables Produce Warehouse and at numerous produce warehouses. I found not one pallet was higher than 4 inches. So it turned out that all food in California was 2 inches illegal. That's how absurd this is. We had to have our food 6 inches. The rest of California can have their food 4 inches above the ground. A 2x4 typically is 4 inches high. Then the other thing is that in the very final analysis, the reason we do have these two health permits now, and we had them at the time of your arrest, they were temporarily suspended, however, because the Recreation and Parks Commission had outlawed their permit policy on July 19th, 1990, so that even though we even at one point gave them over 800 postcards signed by 800 different people requesting that the matter be put on their agenda, and they ignored us. And that actually, they didn't exactly ignore us. They had a vigilante named Andrew Soloff throw me to the ground and start beating my head into the ground at the Rec and Park meeting. Subsequently, I was therefore arrested and charged with assault.
Which you were convicted or acquitted of?
I was actually released shortly after when I said I had a videotape of the incident and would like to press charges against Mr. Soloff.
And did you ever press those charges?
I did not, even though I had a video of him attacking me. And I was just attacked, actually, again by a vigilante group at a police commission meeting in Berkeley on the pepper spray incident, the same type of attack.
Now, when did this happen?
That happened on Wednesday. After the police commission meeting, I was walking out.
We're talking day before yesterday?
Day before yesterday, and I spoke against there's a Justice Department financed community group called Respect. It's set up by the U.S. Justice Department in cooperation with the Berkeley City Police, and they're an organization that is paid by our tax dollars to advocate for the increased budgets and increased police powers of the police, and I had mentioned that in my public comment, that I thought that this was very much just subverting the democratic process to have essentially half of the audience be paid to attend and to speak, or to be, they themselves did not get a salary to go there and attend, but they would have never showed up had they not been part of a high-financed, and you could tell it was highly financed, because they had full-color large buttons that said Respect, that were multicolored buttons. And they all said the same things, essentially, that the police are fantastic and they would never do anything wrong and that pepper spray was needed.
Now, this was at a Berkeley hearing on the question of, I thought Berkeley had outlawed pepper spray.
They were trying to outlaw pepper spray. They had the hearing to do so on Wednesday.
A hearing before?
Before the police commission.
The police commission or the Citizens Police Review Board?
Citizens Review Board, right.
Okay.
Now, they that same organization has assaulted me in San Francisco, but anyway, and so what's, events, political events are being manipulated, and the media, needless to say, other than our own media, fails to mention that this is what's going on. In the case of the city opposition to the permit process, the city government paid.